Oh, g'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Little Mullet Podcast, live here from Quiddler's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia for, of course, Little Mullet Network's prime show, the Little Mullet Podcast, celebrating action movies from the 80s, 90s and beyond, and action stars. And we have one star tonight who I have an immense respect for. Not only for his acting chops, because he's quite a good actor, but also the fact that back in the 90s, he was an action star, folks. That's right. Not only did he kick the crap out of Daniel LaRusso and certainly tormented him in Karate Kid 3, but beyond that, using his own martial arts skills, he was the head of many an action film in the 90s. And of course, one of the great ones is Excessive Force, which has some great stars in it. James L. Jones, Lance Henriksen, and Tony Todd, and of course, the man himself, Thomas Ian Griffith, a Taekwondo and, of course, Kenpo stylist, which we're going to be chatting about tonight here on the show.
I sit here waiting, contemplating what's the best day, watching that you move the
Leather Mullet. Woohoo! Here we go, folks. Episode number 106 here on the Leather Mullet Podcast. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien, the one with the mullet, the one with the hair, and of course, the one with the love of action film cinema here, of course, on the Leather Mullet Network. And tonight, we're going to share some of that love for a film and an actor that I think really should have just kept going. Action films, folks, because I tell you what, he's got the size, he's got the build, he's got the acting chops, and he's certainly got the kicks to really do it. That's, of course, the one and the only Thomas Ian Griffith, an amazing actor, and at a time when, of course, he's going to be, folks, in the next series of Cobra Kai. Yes, the great series, which is continuing, of course, the Karate Kid legend, and, of course, kicking the butt of the one, Daniel LaRusso, who is the real bad guy, of course, folks, because Cobra Kai were really put out by this guy, and of course, his amazing, tough teacher from Okinawa, the one and the only Mr. Miyagi, of course. And Daniel LaRusso is such an evil, evil person that he took it out on, of course, Cobra Kai. And really, you know, destroyed the life of one Sensei Kreese. And of course, his master, Thomas Ian Griffith, folks. Thomas Ian Griffith is an amazing talent, and we're going to get right into his stuff very, very soon. But before we do that, we got to let you know where you can catch this show and more, don't we? G'day mate, how you going? Welcome to the Little Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Little Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host Mark Newbold into a deep dive of Star Trek. You can also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis, and where you can also find the Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe, all here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com, or on your favourite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema. And now it's time for the news here on the Little Mullet Podcast. Oh yeah. Now, of course, news time, folks, is going to be geared towards the podcast right now and what's coming up very, very, very soon here on the channel, folks. That's right. Well, I'll tell you what. September's only around the corner, and of course, we need to kick a show into gear and give you guys the news you need and also the background on such a huge, massive new universe, and that is, of course, on, of course, the Dune show we do here. That is D-U-N-E. That's right, Dune. Frank Herbert's amazing universe. And, of course, one that's continued by Brian Herbert and, of course, Kevin J. Anderson now with a whole series of new novels. And, of course, now a massive film with Denis Villeneuve about to drop. And, of course, early September, which is going to be great. I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be fantastic. And, of course, the merch is starting to really get out there. So there's games like, of course, Dune, the old board game, which is out. And it's been out for a good year now, the new version of that. And it's fantastic. And there's many different editions they've added onto it. You can get ones with miniatures involved in it. It is the old game from the late 70s, early 80s. And it is still just as good as it was. You know, you build up your armies and obviously you play in turns to get the spice and all that sort of stuff. It really is a great, you know, it's center. It is a board game. You know, that's what it is. There's elements of role play to it, but there's been companion versions where the Bene Tilex and the Ixians are involved in as well. So for those that know, that is the extension of course, the Dune universe. You can get those extensions to add to the game as well. Now, along with that has been a new game that's come out, which I haven't played yet, folks, and I'm interested to try and play it. It's kind of a game called a deck card building game, or a deck building game, I suppose they call them. But basically, it's a massive card game built around the premise of a board game as well, and it's called Dune Imperium. And so you basically are doing similar to, I think, the board game. You are building up your wealth and building up your spice, all that sort of stuff, is whether your house or whether you're the Spacing Guild or the Bene Gesserit or any of those. We could be even House Carino, whatever it is. You can build up those sorts of fiefdoms and also battle it out between houses, all that sort of stuff. Anything that's in Dune, plans and scheming and all that sort of stuff is all done in that. And it's for 1 to 4 players and looks fantastic. I will be looking into that in the coming months to give it a shot. But what I'm really enjoying is the new Dune RPG, Adventures in the Imperium. Now, I've downloaded the PDF copy from Modiphius. So I bought that the other day. And it looks absolutely scrumptious, folks. Let's just put it that way. So I'm not going to review it as yet because I'm still reading it. I really want to get in depth of what they've created. It's a different core mechanic than I'm used to. It's 2D20, which is a little bit different. I'm used to D&D and I suppose old school Palladium and, of course, even the new Fantasy Flight Games style of narrative dice as well. And back to West End Star Wars, the D6 and stuff like that. So I'm used to different mechanics, so I'm really interested to see how this one plays out, and particularly with how they're building their own houses in it. There's a lot of great features in this. You don't have to just play House Atreides or House Harkonnen or House Carino, Fremen, Spacing Guild, Mentats. You didn't name it. It's all in there, folks. You can play pretty much anything. But what's really grabbed my attention is just the depth. I don't think I've seen this sort of depth. I mean, this is outside the novels, of course. Probably since the Dune Encyclopedia from the 1980s, which for a little while I had a good copy of and then lost it. So I have read it. And again, that was, I think it was set before, or at least was written before God Emperor came out, if I remember right, or might have been just as God Emperor came out. So a lot of what was in there was, you know, again, it's not canon as such, but it was certainly a nice extension and building up the expanded universe of what Frank created. But this is really, again, like any great book in the role-playing game universes, of whether it's the franchises that we all know or new ones and ones that we probably haven't even seen before, different worlds. You need to have that world building there, and it really, really does it in this book so far. So hats off to the creators, but we'll talk about all of that and more on the Mullet Guild. It's coming back in about 2 weeks' time, and we're going to get headlong into it. Already talked to a couple of guests that are be coming on, and we do hope to get at least Kevin J. Anderson on soon. Yeah, so if you're listening, Kevin, please reach out. We'd love to chat to you. But also Brian Herbert, which I chatted to quite a few years ago on another channel I had running called Jogcast Radio Network. So I would say that to all you Dune fans out there, now's the time to headlong get back into things, folks, and really enjoy the universe, because I think this new film coming, You know, it's going to be something that opens up a few more eyes to the universe of Dune and hopefully a few more readers, their ears and eyes to this amazing universe, particularly the audiobooks, folks. Got to say, the audiobooks are doing really, really well, particularly the original novel. And, of course, Dune Messiah, they did a really good job with that too.
Oi, how's your man?
Welcome to the dojo. Leave your shoes outside the door.
All right, listeners, you know that I've been talking about this gentleman for a little while, and of course the work that he's been doing. That is, of course, Anthony Cummins, and of course his research into the amazing worlds of Japanese Budo, whether it's the samurai arts or the shinobi arts. So, of course, we're talking about his work in translating old scrolls of, you know, martial artists from previous periods, whether it be well before the Meiji Restoration. We're talking about well before the Edo period even. And, of course, this is samurai and different writers that were doing things in the early Edo period to document the different techniques, different ways of fighting from the warriors in the Sengoku period, which is well before the peaceful times of the Edo period. So for you out there that are not used to the sort of history from Japan, to give you an idea, the Sengoku period was when you're sort of hearing about the stories of wild warriors, Ronin, all that sort of stuff that you hear, and of course, see in TV shows, read about, all that sort of stuff, the amazing adventures that you think of when you think of the name samurai or ninja, Ronin, all those sorts of amazing warriors, or even just the warrior monks from those times. It was basically the Wild West to a certain extent. You know, this is a period where schools of swordsmanship, schools of samurai, all that sort of stuff, martial arts, you name it, they were, you know, in that warring period of Japan's past. And of course, after the Battle of Sekigahara, things changed, and that was, of course, in the early 1600s, where from then to about 1868, they had the Edo period, where there was this period of peaceful tranquility, where there was no wars. There might have been some one-on-one duels and things like that, if that was ever taking place, but apart from that, the period was a peaceful period. It was a time of reflection, reflecting back on, obviously, what had come before, and this is where we get these great scrolls. And there's many of them, but a lot of them haven't been translated into English. And so, you know, a lot of the time, what we've been hearing about when it comes to ninja and stuff like that is through, of course, the tourism, whether it's from Japan or from the actual films and stuff that we're seeing from the, you know, the mid-1950s on. So what we're seeing is a more theatrical, certainly more, I think, if anything, more iconic view of what these warriors from the past truly were, which was more in line with basically a more James Bond-like, and I don't mean the theatrical James Bond, but more a cloak and dagger, intelligence gatherer sort of warrior, definitely of the samurai class. So one of these great books that Anthony Cummins has done is he's taken the scrolls of the Bunsen Shukai, which is probably one of the more popular ninja scrolls, and gone ahead and translated the whole thing. So I've now got a copy of this. And just to give you the sort of idea, you know, there's everything from, you know, introductions to it to questions and answers about ninjutsu from a, you know, more, I suppose, layman's perspective. Then from there, it goes into the real study of it. Everything from guidelines for commanders, disguise work, hidden infiltration. And then it goes into the tools as well as the principles and a real military side of it. So it's a practical, if anything, a lot of these scrolls were practical. So it's interesting for somebody like myself who studied Bujinkan Ninjutsu. So we're talking about Masaki Hatsumi's style in the past, for a short time at least. And then looking at what was, you know, really the real deal of what they did that far back in the, this would have been the before the 1600s. So that's how far back we're talking about this. And again, it really shows practicality, which I think in the Edo period, what happened was things became more artful. If anything, you move towards a more peaceful and, if anything, more accentuated form of what it was originally. So it's interesting to see the more military-based stuff, which you're seeing here, because it was closer to the time, closer to the people. The people were probably still around and telling those, whether it's the samurai or whatever, the daimyo that would have been riding these amazingly. A lot of them were samurai, of course. Or even the ninja, or in this case, shinobi no mono, which they were called back in the old days. So the Bunsen Shukai, folks, got to say, if you get a chance to, especially if you're in history, into that sort of stuff, particularly from a martial side, it's a real eye-opener. It's something that, for me, I think, you know, made me look at things in a more practical manner when it comes to martial arts. So Anthony Cummins and obviously the work that he's done, it truly is amazing. And of course his it's basically written with himself and of course Yoshie Minami. So hats off to you, you've done a fantastic job. Hey mate, how you going? Come on in, mate. Yeah what shall it be?
Oh yeah. Man, it's been real busy day, you know. Oh wow.
Right
yeah.
On, mate.
Hey. Yeah
it's just like I was telling my mate the other day, you know, have a nice thing.
Here you go, mate. Here, enjoy this beverage and enjoy this film chat.
All right, folks, let's talk about this gentleman. Thomas Ian Griffith was born in March 18, 1962. We know him as an actor, producer, writer, and, of course, martial artist. Most importantly, folks, martial artist. Gives him the discipline to do all this amazing stuff, folks. That's right. Probably best known for 1989's Karate Kid 3, where he played the role of Mr. Terry Silver. And of course, he's coming back to play that role very, very soon. And we got kind of a little bit of a prequel to the character in the last season, where we saw what happened in Vietnam to Kreese, I should say. Sorry. Mr. Martin Cove, the amazing Martin Cove. And stay tuned, folks, because we've got an amazing film, which he starred in quite a few years ago, which was kind of a, I suppose, a Commando Rambo knockoff, but it was a great film. So he grew up in Hartford, Connecticut, and was the son of Marianne and Thomas Joseph Griffith. So I'm guessing that he got the name from his father. obviously, he has a huge martial arts background. And he has, obviously, some great kicks, some really, I mean, due to his height, I think he gets some great flexibility, and we really get to see that in the film that we're going to be chatting about tonight, which I think's just a real interesting film, which a cast in it is just amazing too. And, of course, the first film I saw him in, like most of you, was back in 1989, Karate Kid Part 3. His first feature, actually, too, where, of course, he played pretty much the Emperor Palpatine in the Karate Kid universe. That's what's been likened to a few times, actually. He's basically the puppet master behind everything, which wasn't what it was meant to be originally. Originally, it was going to be just Kreese coming back and basically really becoming a pest to Miyagi and LaRusso. But, of course, this worked out even more interesting because we get a character who is indebted to Kreese as a character, and he just absolutely lived it up all the way. So from there, obviously, he had been in multiple movies and stuff like that since. One of them we're going to be talking about tonight. Another one I'd like to cover here in a few years, few months' time, I should say, not a few years. I've got to do it ASAP. That is, of course, 98's John Carpenter classic, Vampires, which, you know, he played the lead vampire in, Jan Valak. Great film. He's also a small part in XXX, if you remember. He played the original agent that goes out after Yogi and the guys at the start. And, of course, he gets bumped off. And, of course, we bring in, hey, I'm Vin Diesel, I can do anything. All that guy, well, that fella, he got to doing it.
Obviously, too, he's done a lot of work. He's done TV, In the Heat of the Night, Wise Guy, and One Tree Hill. Now, there's a show, folks. If you don't remember this one, Wise Guy. Something I probably will do a special of after doing a bit of a rewatch now that it's on Prime. You can actually watch that great show again. Another great show from the 80s, folks. He'd been in Hollow Point, a 96 film with Tia Carrera, where he played an agent in that one as well. Also opposite Donald Sutherland in that one too. So let's just have a look at his bit of his background. He did play the title role of Rock Hudson in the TV movie of Rock Hudson in his life. 92, he did Ulterior Motives, which I actually have a copy of, folks. And I'll tell you what, we probably will cover that a little bit later. It's an interesting thriller. It's not really an action film. It's more of a thriller. Then he did Kill Fee in 92 as well. Then in 93, the film that we're talking about, of course, and of course that is Excessive Force, playing Terry McCain. Then he did 94, Crackerjack, Blood of the Innocent in 94 as well, Hollow Point, which we just talked about, and then 97, Behind Enemy Lines. Now, this was a bit of a VHS hit out here. We really seemed to do quite well in it. And then he got actually quite a big role in Cull the Conqueror, where he played General Talagaro in it. So there you go. And then, of course, from there in 98's Vampires. Now, he's done quite a bit since, so let's have a look at a little bit of that. He's The Unexpected Mrs. Polyfax, where he played the Jack Farrell, and that's a TV movie. Avalanche in 99, The Secret of Giving, also in 99. Then another TV movie, A Vision of Murder, the story of Donnell. Then we've got in 2000, For the Cause, High Adventure in 2001. 2002, Beyond the Prairie, The True Story of Laura Ingalls. And of course, 2002, Black Point. But here's the big one. Triple X, as we mentioned, he played Agent Jim McGrath from the NSA. So he gets kind of, I tell you what's great about his role in that, he's playing more the straight up Jack Ryan slash James Bond slash Jason Bourne like character, which gets taken out so that they can have an extreme sports nut in there instead. Who would last 5 seconds, folks? Yes, Vin Diesel, I'm talking about you. You would last 5 seconds. Yeah. Maybe not your Riddick character, but you would last 5 seconds. There you go. I've said it. Time Cop 2. That's right. Time Cop 2. The Berlin Decision, played Brandon Miller in that one. He's great. That's actually quite a good film, folks. You guys go and check it out. Obviously, not as big budget as, you know, its theatrical cousin. But Time Cop 2 is a lot of fun. Jason Scott Lee's in that one as well. And it's great having two real martial artists in a film together like that, too. Particularly, I do believe Jason Scott Lee's continued studying martial arts over the years. So it's great to see, you know, all the way back from when I first saw him in Dragon, the Bruce Lee story. Did an amazing job in that one. Then we've got, of course, in 05, he did The Pirate's Curse. And then jump forward all the way, Dolly Parton's Christmas on the Square. He is the producer and consulting producer on that one too. TV, obviously, he's done a lot of work. He was in the Grimm series, writer, story editor, and co-producer. Character himself in that one. He's done Cold Case, One Tree Hill, The Closer, Miami Vice back in 85, who's an extra, and of course now Cobra Kai. Now, what's great about having Thomas, you know, come back to the Karate Kid universe is he was one of the few that was a legit martial artist. Now, a lot of the people in the production, the cast, were taught martial artists, and, you know, they were taught the style that they needed for the film. Now, there was obviously Martin Cove's going on to study martial arts, study karate in particular, and I think Okinawa Te, if I remember right. So he's definitely gone and actually studied karate, and it's given him, you know, obviously, you know, a different, you know, outlook on life, as it does everybody. I remember watching and listening to a couple of interviews where he's, you know, said the influence of martial arts has really helped, and has, you know, helped in life, as has it done for this amazing gentleman here too, who's not only a Taekwondo black belt, but also a Kempo Karate black belt. So let's put that in perspective. Taekwondo, known for its kicks, amazing kicks. You've heard Lee Fillingsness on this show a number of times mention just how amazing that is for your flexibility and just your ability to get height, power, and dexterity in your legs, in your kicks. So you got that style. Then you got Kenpo Karate, which is basically, at its heart, Shaolin, kind of. You know, it's a Shaolin style. Kenpo is basically that in Okinawa. If you say that there, it's pretty much what it is. And of course, it, whether it's Kenpo Karate studied under the system of American Kenpo, it would be the same sort of style as Jeff Speakman. So it gives you kind of the idea of the fast hand movements. The kick's not so high, but definitely, you know, within the reason of striking really hard and fast. But just the flurry of blows and the amazing blocks and dexterity of the arms as well, and power. So it gives you an idea of what the martial arts are that, you know, Terry Silver would know. Whether that's what Cobra Kai is in the show, it'd be a little bit different. But again, what's great is this is a man that's a learned martial artist, and you're getting that on screen, but and also master actor. That's what's amazing about this amazing talent.
And I've been working long, long, long days ahead, working in front of a VHS.
Excessive Force came out in 1993. It's an American-made action film directed by John Hess and written and co-produced and starring, of course, the one, the only, Thomas Ian Griffith. And, of course, out here, it was put out by the amazing New Line Cinema. And I do remember this being on the shelves everywhere, folks. And I tell you what, ever since, I think I've only ever seen it on VHS everywhere too. But you know what? There's a certain love and admiration I have for VHS, folks, which means it is adorning my VHS collection over here right now as we speak. Because VHS rocks, folks. It's awesome. So this came out in the summer of 93. For us, it's the winter out here. And it was, again, not exactly a huge hit. But you know what? The hell with critics, folks, because they don't understand action movies, do they? Hell no. No, they don't. They have no clue what makes an amazing action film. To me, Excessive Force is up there with those Steven Seagal films, for example, those first five. This is the feeling that you get, except this guy can kick ass. He really can. And I'm talking about, you know, a guy who's just as tall as Seagal and Lundgren and can do just as much damage. We're talking about a guy who is amazing. Thomas Ian Griffith playing the role of Detective Terry McCain in this, and his partner is Tony Todd from The Crow and from amazing amount of movies, folks. Just as amazing list of films. Of course, Tony playing the role of Detective Frankie Hawkins, his partner in this, as they basically go out and deal with the bad guys, and of course, one of those being, of course, one of the big ones, that's right, from The Rocky, that's right. Well, I'll tell you what, folks. When you've got Rocky's brother, Burt Young, playing Sal DiMarco, the head of the mafia in this one, you know there's something going down. Also starring in this is, of course, Charlotte Lewis from The Golden Child, Lance Henriksen, Strata of Hard Target, folks, is even wearing the same gear, playing the captain of the police, Raymond Devlin. And playing Jake, the bartender and friend, of course, of Terry McCain, the one, the other, James Earl Jones. We also had Tom Hodges playing Detective Dillon. And, of course, a number of other amazing talents in this as well. The film is basically played out like, you know, one of those police procedurals. Plenty of action at the start. It's got a great opening action scene where we see Thomas Ian Griffith going guns blazing with two twin barrel 45s, folks. That's right. M1911s with extended compensators at the front. He basically almost looks like the Phantom racing to this scene. But at the same time, as he's gun-toting the action, he's also doing high kicks and spin kicks and reverse kicks. You name it, folks. And some really great right crosses, etc. too. There's a real kickboxing feel to this as well. Now, what's great about it, too, is we get to see a world built up around the character of Terry McCain, not only his former love interest, Anna Gilmore, or his former partner in this, but also the deaths of his friends and partner in this, and then, of course, getting further along with other detectives, like, of course, Tony Todd's character, Frankie Hawkins, and this whole sort of, I think, at the end of the day, you know, the whole corruption angle of, you know, people that work for the police force, and then they're given a big sum of money they're meant to put into, whether it's, you know, in for, you know, court cases coming up. They've got to have that evidence there. But then the evidence goes walkabout. Who took it? That's the mystery of this film, is who has taken the mafia's money, the hood's money, whatever you want to call it. And that's a great mystery in this too, as we see a number of characters bumped off and then they might just mysteriously reappear. You never know. You have to watch the film to find out. But there's some great fighting in this. We get to see fight scenes in between some lead characters. I don't want to spoil it, folks. You're going to have to actually watch it to see who fights who, but it's great. We get to see some great verbal sparring matches too between Thomas Ian Griffith and Bishop from Aliens, man. And no, he doesn't do the knife trick in this one. It's awesome. It even had a sequel, Excessive Force 2, Force on Force, come out. And, you know, again, it came out in 95, but it didn't have anyone that we knew in it. Stacey Randall was the main agent in it. I can't see any other names that I know, folks, to be honest. There's literally not many on here that I can remember. No, no, and no. So if you're going to watch one, you've definitely got to watch this first one. It's really, really well done as far as getting that action feel, particularly at the start of, you know, I think the takeoff of Thomas's career. Excessive Force has that feel. If you enjoy the action thrillers of Jean-Claude Van Damme, even, it kind of has that feel of his earlier films, as well as Steven Seagal and even Dolph Lundgren. But this guy can really act. And he's done a great job. So, on, of course, the one and only lethal mullet meter that we have here. First one, the action meter, is a definite balls to the wall 5 out of 5. Now, when it comes to the film as a whole, story-wise, surprise-wise, actually, it's quite a good little plot for a police procedural action film. And this is what I enjoy about it the most, is the surprise at the end. You get a real... You know, pull the sheet out from under you. Feel about this one. It has that feel. So on the Hallenbach scale, folks, it's going to get a 4.5 out of 5. There you go. You don't get that often here on the show, do you?
G'day, folks. Hope you're enjoying the great shows here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to check out all the great shows that we have on offer and subscribe on the master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. You can check Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Rysel and Lee Fillingsis on their platform. You can also check out Culture Clash, which is the weekly look at pop culture hosted by Kevin and Kyle. Couch Potato Theatre, this is a cult classics and guilty pleasure podcast. Also Time Warp, a fandom flashback show. End Zone, a look at the NFL, the American football. Also, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, looking at the great films of Alfred Hitchcock. Union Federation podcast, a Star Trek and Orville podcast, looking at Discovery, and of course, Picard, plus the Orville. But also, the Hair Metal podcast, looking at the great shows put on by the amazing bands back in the late 80s, their discs, their LPs, everything, all covering the fashion as well. Hosted by Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel. You can also check out Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, hosted by Kevin and Dan Hadley, looking at all the eras of Doctor Who. You can also catch out What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast, an amazing show looking at Star Wars, hosted by Derek and Scott. And of course, our newest one, the amazing, The Mullet Guild, an offshoot of the Lethal Mullet podcast, looking at Frank Herbert's Dune universe. This is like an encyclopedia for Dune, where I take you through and down into the rabbit hole of Frank Herbert's amazing space opera, the sprawling universe which is going to be brought to life by Denis Villeneuve and December 18. You can check out all the shows there. Be sure to also go onto the social platforms on Twitter at FanPod Network. Let us know what you think of the shows and what else you can look at there. You can also check out great articles that we put up through there that we share. Also check out on Instagram and Facebook, Phantom Podcast Network. Be sure to make sure that every Tuesday you check out the great work done by Making Treks as well. A brand new podcast looking at a deep dive of Star Trek, hosted by myself, James Semple, and of course, the ever popular and amazing writer of Star Trek and Star Wars, Mark Newbold. Go and check it out, folks, and we'll catch you next time here on the Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet Podcast. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.